Welcome back to Radio Shetland, where it's time again to invite you to come in about the night. The night's edition is a bit unusual. It was recorded outside in the summertime, on a day of sunshine and showers, when poet Christine De Luca was home for Edinburgh for a few days to launch a new book. Mary Blance invited her to share some memories and music, and they headed west.
Well, here we are, and this might have been announced as a come in about the night, but it's actually come out in the afternoon, recorded back in the summer. And I'm sitting here in the community garden at Vaux in Oise with Christine De Luca, and this is part of her stamping ground. Christine, do kens this place quite well, doesn't do?
I certainly do. This is where I was brought up. I bayed here for I was two. I was born in Bress, and then we bayed in mid-Oise for a 20 month while the house was being, the bathroom was being put in, I think. And so the only place I really mind will for all my childhood is Oise, Dunhousen Oise. And this is Vaux House, and at that time, on the Closs of Vaux, there were folk biding in it that I kent will and what a lass I used to play with, and this was the back garden. So it's lovely, and it's a camping boot now and a community garden. I think it's a smashing idea.
And we're fun of, I think it does, it's a farm for a hall or something, and we're pooed at the boot and all that kind of
<It's Lee. laughs>
out of the worst of the wind, and it is a beautiful summer day.
Yeah, and somebody will maybe come up and say sugar or sugarers.
So you was actually born in Bress, do you say?
I was, yes. My father got a job there after the war, and they were there for 20 years, and I'm sure that was a formative experience for them, and they spoke very warmly of it. But then this job came up at Oise, and he bade their eyes teaching life, and he loved it.
So what was thy very, very earliest memory of all?
Oh, mercy. I mind pulling a cabinet down on top of me. I was quite an adventurous bairn, and I mind doing that, and I can still see the stew, the cinnamon and ginger and everything, and I mind my mother rubbing butter on me brew and thinking, what is she doing? And they were really quite worried about me, but I was fine. But that was one of my earliest memories.
What age does the time do was then?
I was thinking about three. And I mind it my fifth birthday very, very clearly. Coming home, I'd been into Lerwick, and it was obviously getting me some clothes for going to school. And I'd gotten this grey skirt that was completely circular, which I thought was a ballet dress. It actually grey flannel. And a pretty grey cardigan. I was awful pleased. And I'd been to the hairdresser for a proper haircut. That was also to celebrate my birthday. And we took my granduncle, Heyman, with Piri Morris' 8 car, and I fell half asleep, glindered, you might say, in the back seat. And Mum said to my granduncle, "She lives off her nerves." I had no idea what that meant.
That probably meant you had a lot of energy to use up.
Ah, dear, dear. What time is?
So apart from the mum and dad, what was in your family?
Well, there was four of us. Eric was 5 years older as me, and Joy was just 1.5 years older as me. And we were often time for twins, which she didn't like, because I was just about the same height as her. And when you're pretty, you don't like that. And then when I was nearly 8, then Ronnie was born, and that was just absolutely wonderful, because of course at that age you just want the doll and the pram and all that. And here was a real doll. I can mind that night that he was born as clear as yesterday. It was so exciting. Nurse Campbell came down the stairs and said, "It's a boy, it's a boy." And we jumped up on the sofa. That was lovely.
And what kind of home life did you have? You would have been in the schoolhouse.
We were in the schoolhouse, which I suppose was strange in a way. We had to be brally, we'll try and be well behaved, because you had to be kind of seen to be a bit of an example, which for me was a bit difficult, I have to say. But on the other hand, you had to be fully integrated into the community. So you were riding a kind of a thin line sometimes. But it was a lovely community to be brought up in. Folk were very kind and very open. Everybody's door was open, and we all played together. Brally will, and I mean, we were just outside in the summertime. I mind summers like this. This is a lovely summer, but we were outside the hill time in the summer, and folk would lend you their boat if you didn't hay, and we dammed the burn and redammed the burn and catch bandy eels and crabs, and we used to have crab syndicates. When I think about them, they used to stink. We mark boxes and keep them in and try and save them up, and then we'd sort of camp with our bairns to how many crabs we could collect. Things we used to do.
Were you Kirky folk?
We were, yes. And I think I mean, it was quite a, I don't know, kind, but quite an open kind of community. Folk were kirky, but no awful devout, if you came what I mean. They were quite open, and certainly in Warhus, it was a very open kind of religion. My mother especially was a like at the gang to the kirk. She ran this help at the Sunday school, and she sang in the choir. She had the most beautiful alto voice, and I used to love standing next to her singing. And Dad came a bralock as well, and they encouraged us to go. The lasses were going and the boys were in the gang. Usual story, okay. But it was a big part of our life. But Sunday dinner time, I mean, it was a ding-dong argument about the sermon and pulling it to pieces in the kirk and who it was again, the devilry. And it was great fun when I think about it. We weren't made to think particular things, but we were. It was a strength in our upbringing, and I'm being very blithe of that, out and in among my life, I would say. And the whole idea of grace and forgiveness and starting over, I think, is a good thing. And if you only have one book to read, well, you can't get much further wrong. You can't get wrong if you read the Bible. I mean, it's a wonderful, wonderful book, and it's wonderful literature. And some of the Old Testament, it's just, the literature is wonderful.
Well, one of the reasons I asked you that question was that the running through thy poetry is there's knowledge of the scriptures.
I suppose that's right. I wouldn't have counted myself as being a Bible scholar by any matter of means, but sometimes a verse will come back to me and I'll hit a fin it, you can, that kind of thing. And it's, there's so much wisdom. Well, in all the great religions of the world, there's that much common wisdom. It did have a huge effect. And then, like, things that I mind, like harvest homes and things like that, they were great times, and you decorate the kirk, and I can still sort of see it, you can.
Well, we're going to change the tempo quite a bit. For the first bit of music at those picket for the programme is not something that anybody might predict.
No, it's a song by Semisonic, which is a reasonably up-to-date group, I believe. I kind of mind that many songs, like records for childhood. I mean, we sang an awful lot for songbooks and for hymn books and daft, silly songs, but we didn't have lots of records or anything like that. We didn't even have electricity, we're going to say. And so this is really for my son's childhood, and he loves this group, and I quite enjoy their music. And this thing is called, what's it called, Mary?
Gone to the Movies.
Gone to the Movies, that's right. And it's lovely. And when I think about going to the movies or to the film house, what did we call it? Going to the pictures.
Going to the pictures, yes.
We only get twice in my whole childhood. We get to see the coronation in 1953, the Hill family, and then we get to see a film called Cheaper by the Dozen, which was about a big family, and it was very wholesome, so we are getting inside that.
Now the rain comes down the windows and it drops onto the forehead of the waiting boy. He surveys his rental kingdom and he wonders if he's really lost his one joy. Another fool would go down to the only place she ever went to lose herself. She's gone to the movies now, and she don't need your help. City sky reflects the silver street below, and it covers up the cars and the wallflowers. CD ended half an hour ago. Another fool would dig the broken car out from the snow and drive to find the show. She's gone to the movies now, and she's not coming home. She's gone to the movies now, and she's not coming home.
Back to the community garden and wise, and Well, you've been listening to your music. We're actually repositioned to ourselves, didn't we?
Yes, because of the wind.
So we hope there's less wind in the next bit. And that was Semisonic going to the movies. Christine, was going to the primary school difficult since the fader was the head teacher?
Well, no, really, because I used to slip in at the back of the class sometimes when nobody was looking. I was desperate to go to the school, actually. And it wasn't really, no. And I loved it. It was no bother of that.
Mm-hmm. Did you actually have him for a teacher?
No, never, no. I don't think that would have been a good idea. No, I'd Miss Paul, and then I had her mother was Mrs. Irvine, and it was great. They were both very keen on stories and literature when I think about now, and Mrs. Irvine on a Friday afternoon would read us a story, maybe an abridged Charles Dickens or something like that, with great expression. Again, it was good.
What about outside of the school? Did you have to do any work at home or anything like that?
Yeah, we really were. I think we're folk were keen that we had a very ordinary life and a very traditional life. They'd both come from Crofton folk, and they both valued that. And in fact, Happy Hansel School had a croft, and it had been gifted with a laird through the kirk way back in 1700 and something, I think it was, because Wise was one of the first schools in Shetland. And the Happy Hansel, the old school up at the top of the hill here, had a croft attached to the school and schoolers. And they used to lodge bairns with their perts, and they used to teach Latin. And so anyway, the part of the teacher's salary, so to speak, was this croft, and it would be in perpetuity, if that's the right word, passed on from head teacher to head teacher. And Dad was very keen on this piece of history, and that it should be worked as a proper croft. So we used to grow corn and tatties and kale and neeps and carrots and that kind of thing. And then they'd just hoosgarden as well, with all kinds of vegetables and flowers, and then there's the schoolgarden, and he was keen that bairns learned food to grow things, and in the summertime, I came to be doing it one time, and we had pits as well, and a boat to paint, and it was, the summer was just a crazy activity, but it was good, because you learned food to do things, and he would kill a yow, and Mum would make puddings, and no, we did all the kind of ordinary things that folk did.
That strikes me as a bonus for being for a teacher's family, that you get that crofting experience as well.
It was. It meant you weren't different for the other bairns either, and I think that was important. I didn't feel any different, and a lot of my friends are still there.
Mm-hmm. Well, were they a lot of bairns about to play with?
Oh yeah, there was tons of them.
Did you play a lot of structured games as well? That's something bairns do less nowadays.
We did in the interval times, we did that. There was a lass's playground and a boy's playground. And you better know, going into the ring, of course, in those days. And the lass's played a lot of games. You know, the dusty bluebells and that kind of thing. And when you had to choose a wife, yeah, running in a ring. I can't remember what they were. The farmer wants a wife, all that kind of thing. And then we'd skipping and singing and games. And I mind one. It was horrible when I think about it. And it was... You had to put somebody's name in, and I mind there was a new lass came back to bide here, and her name was Bab Twat. So her name was immediately put in. It was Bab Twat is a fool, send her to the raggy school. When she's dead, boil her head, mak her into gingerbread. Wasn't that solemn?
Oh, was that a skipping song?
That was a skipping song. And we all got our names. We just took it in good part. We all got our names put in into it, you can. But for a new body coming, that wasn't
some
very,
welcome.
It was a bit cruel. But there was a lot of that kind of thing going on, yeah.
And I can gather from the first book of poetry, there were a lot of going to the Ila and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Brilliant. Nothing better than to come home and eat it. Absolutely. And Wasfo was a good place for fishing. And of course then there was the Norskies boats would come in. We'd a lot of fishing boats come in. It was quite lively. But the Norskies were definitely our favourites. There was the Shetland boats and there was the Aberdeen trawlers and there was the Norskie boats. And you can just hear them coming in, boom, 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 boom.
That special boom, noise.
Special, special noise. And they were friendly folk, and my father could speak Norwegian, so it meant that he would hail them and bring them in about the night and speak to them, and it was lovely. In fact, they made some friendships with them, and they'd even visit them in Norway, and they would come back, and it was lovely. Mine was going on the boats, and they would give us Cox's orange pippins. And Macintosh raids. We'd never seen such glorious things, okay? But we'd no fear going on. And our folk didn't seem to have any fear of what was going on. They were awful, friendly folk. Lovely.
Mm-hmm. Well, any particular poem that they would maybe like to share with us about the childhood?
Well, we're on the Claws of O, and my Mary, that was a braver sledging. That was brilliant. Terrifying, but really good. But the other place we sledged was Lizzie Coutts's Now, and I had a pity poem about that. I can see Lizzie Coutts's Now over here, and it doesn't look a big hill now, but I'll tell you it was good. So I'll read you that one. I'll have to find him first. I don't think I even need the words. I ken him that well. But just in case. Out of school on winter days, we'd sprit across the foot to Lizzie Coutts's Now, sledges niggin' at our heels like Aberwhelp. Hulls weren't a better made for sledging. Low on yoch for a quick basil to the tap. Steep on yoch to taste the age of danger. Lang on yoch to savour. We'd pile on twa or three of us, een on tap of tither. Belly gutsy for the brave, nae triss of fair. The runk of iron up of ice, snaw spindrif smoking of the fiss. A rummel of screechs as we swooshed o'er every bump afore we cummel. Then hame for tea, glyphs ice matted, hands rid raw, we poon up a kayar. In by for the spunder of the night, we hit, tufting and under our nails, and we're in, blinded in the light.
I think that'll probably bring back a lot of memories to a lot of folk. Just mind the way your fingers used to just... You came in absolutely summon.
That's right.
No, I think we'd maybe better stop and have thy next bit of music.
Right.
No, where are we going this time? Yes, it's the Beatles, it's Michelle.
Right, Will. This is me moving on, I suppose, towards the secondary stage and going into Lerwick to the hostel. And it wasn't long before the Beatles music started to come on the scene. And that was a big bit of our youth, really. And I just love other music, I suppose. But Michelle is when he stays in me. And it's just typical of that part of my life, I suppose.
So I'll let you sing along when it's on. The Beatles, and of course that tax was brings thee to secondary school in Lerwick. And they bide in the hostel, didn't they?
I did, and that was a very, very formative experience, I would say, for any lass. I like it. I mean, it was kind of hard in a funny way, But it was good. And I'm thinking back to when we used to buy these records. Every week we bought a record and there was a system. Of course, lasses are great for organising, okay? And we had a trupney butt for everybody every week. And each class took it in turns to collect this trupney butts, and you took it in turns to choose the record. And I can still see it was like a tobacco tin, like Golden Virginia, and it was stacked up with this trupney butts. And we used to go to the record shop and get to choose this record. And we had a big old record player and pile them up. You could pile them up high and then it would plop down one by one. It was wonderful.
That would have been the fun side of life of the hostel. I expected it had its down side as well.
Well, the meat wasn't wonderful, I have to say. And I used to love getting home on a Friday night. Mum would have some lovely cook it for us. It was great. But I mind the malt. That was definitely something different. We kind of moved to bells. There'd be bells. We'd come and listen to the news at 6 o'clock. There'd be a bell for that. And we all sat around the radiogram, maybe 55 lasses. Very biddable bairns we were. And we'd listen to the news. And then there'd be a bell for malt. And we'd queue up. And there's a long, long queue. We'd take a spoon, a big dessert spoon, and queue up. Now, for me, that wasn't a punishment because I liked malt. But for some means, it was really, they just hated it. And they'd try and get out of it. But I'm sure they couldn't it was out and couldn't it was in. So we had this huge jar of malt and we had to get this in and then wash our spoons up and put them away. And then we had bell for study and we had to go and bell for our tea and everything, bell for supper. We moved really to bells. But having said that, we had an awful lot of laughs. And of course, there's lasses for an hour. And the Isles lasses. And the melded accents and the different words. I mind the Yael lasses, they said, "I'm skitched me legs." And I hadn't heard that word. I'm skitched. You kind of got gutter up the back of your leg. Splendid word, that. And the Walser lasses with their most magnificent accent. Okay, and it was good.
No. So even then, they was fascinated by the dialect.
I think I was. I was lucky too, because my father's folk came from Vidlin, and my mother's folk from Coningsborough, and I came, of course, for the West side. So I was already kind of exposed to quite a lot of them. My cousins spoke differently for me, and my father was also very, very interested in language and linguistics and place names, and he was analysing things and speaking about it, and he had dictionaries. Icelandic dictionaries and Norwegian dictionaries. He was awful, awful interested in that kind of thing.
And did you listen to him?
No, enough. No, wish I had, because it would give him a lot of pleasure, and I didn't. I only listened to half a lug.
And what about the school itself? What taught you in the institute?
Well, I like it. It's fine. Of course, when you're that age, it's a big, it's part of your social life. You're going to school, it's a social life, don't you? And the lessons are kind of incidental.
Yes, that's true.
But luckily, we had a lot of good teachers. And again, my English, I think we were blessed with very good teachers. I mean, Nessie gave us a very good grounding in English. And then the two Grahams, Lolly and Johnny, were really excellent. They were such enthusiasts, and they were enthusiasts for the dialect too, not just for good literature for the canon of English literature, but also Shetland literature as well.
When they was at the school, did the king what they wanted to do?
Yes, I did. I wanted to be a teacher. My folk were both teachers, and they spoke about it incessantly, and I loved listening to them speaking about it. When I came home at the weekend, I'd be going to the school and look at what they've been doing, and I found it interesting, the whole idea of teaching. And it was never a doubt in my mind that was what I wanted to do.
Well, I think we'll maybe better play the next piece of music, because the rain has come on now.
The still blue sky.
Be able to hear the rain. And
yes,
that'll give us a chance to get a bit of shelter.
That's right. Well,
this is thy Leave in Shetland.
Yeah, this is Willie Hunter and playing Leave in Lerwick Harbour. Not that it was around then, but of course I'm playing a lot since then. You come to the end of your school days, you realise you'd be going away. But I just love this piece of music, and the way he plays it, and you can't, that he wasn't going to live much longer, but there's an awful lot of courage in the way he played it, and an awful emotional strength, and just the sheer virtuosity and the technical expertise with every note he plays. It's a quite emotional thing to listen to.
Thank you.
Cave in Lerwick Harbour by Willie Hunter, accompanied by Violet Dullock. And the rain is keen off now, so we're back in the garden. Plague it be pretty blue bottles this time. Well, now we're going to take the away for Shetland. Where was it to set off to college for?
I got to Edinburgh University for 4 years and did a geography degree and all kinds of weird and wonderful things like logic and metaphysics and maths.
How would have loved me to do English though?
Well, I did 1 year English and I didn't really enjoy that that muckle, to be honest. There was, I think it was 400 in the class and it seemed brawly impersonal and I would have gone on with it, but it wasn't a, didn't fire up my imagination an awful lot, I have to say.
But geography did?
Yes, I did. And I've always been fascinated by maps. And I suppose that was maybe what I liked about it. And so I wanted to teach, and I was also doing maths, and I thought geography would be a better subject to teach, because I think you can make it accessible to our bairns. And it's important, I think, it's an important subject for them to ken where they are and ken other important aspects of the world and the landscape and who it came to be and who mankind lives on it and uses it.
Well, as we were driving out here today, they were saying about the power that the landscape can have over somebody.
Yes, it's a very strange thing who it is that you feel for land and place. And refugees, it must be terrible to feel you don't have a place. And although I don't own a patch of land in Shetland, I think the thing about Shetland is you feel you can walk anyway and folk will no scoom you off of it. Whereas I find that really strange when I get to Edinburgh. There was no way that you could really go either in a public park and feel at ease. You couldn't relax in a place like that. And unless you get to the beach, everything was fenced in. I felt awful, awful fenced in. I still feel fenced in a city, actually. I've never really adjusted to a city after that year.
And how does it feel as it gets nearer and nearer to us?
Well, more and more excited as I come along the Hulmleys and see the lochs, and especially if it's an evening time and the light on them is just lovely, and I come by the brig and up the hill. And then as you just come in over the brew, and then it just opens with the for you, and I see Happy Hansel, and I do have a kind of an emotional link with Wash, and I'd rather pity rods in about it. It's a bonny place.
And then came the working world.
Yes. Then came Murray House for a year and then teaching. And it's hard for the first 20 years till you get into it, but I did enjoy it. I taught in a school called Broughton High School for 10 years in Edinburgh.
And did you find then that geography was being the right choice?
Yes, I would say so. It suited me down to the ground because it's very, very visual. I'm quite a visual person, I think, and you can use stories, you can use novels, you can use poems, you can use music, maps, pictures, all kinds of things as resources when you're teaching something like geography. It lies in between the arts and the sciences, and that's where I think I'm most comfortable. I'm definitely a social scientist.
And of course, during that time, my first marriage couldn't break up for you.
Well, it did, and that was a very sad thing to happen. I had gone out with James Motes for maybe my 4th year at school, and we were, as you'd say, gyan trang, and it was awful sad. I think maybe if we'd been here, things might have been different, but I think we were over young. And but the problem, really, when I think about it in retrospect now, for me, after that, was it really made it difficult for me to have a relationship with Shetland, the same easy relationship I'd had. I mean, not only was it a personal disaster in terms of loss and touch with a family I'd come to love and respect and all that kind of thing, but it was certainly a change in my relation with Shetland. I lost my confidence completely. And for a person like me to lose my confidence is really, because I'm quite a reasonably confident person, It's a solemn thing to have to deal with. And I'm not sure I dealt with it all that well. But teaching actually was a good thing for me, because I managed, that was something I was doing competently, and I didn't lose my confidence there. And the bairns, of course, are just new every day for you, and they keep it me going. And I managed through it. My folk were very supportive. But in those days, my mercy, divorce was unheard of almost in Shetland. You can hardly believe it now looking back, but I felt embarrassed about that, and I didn't have, when I came north, I didn't really want to meet folk. I didn't meet any folk.
And around that time, you started to write.
I did. I think that was maybe a why of dealing with things. Not that I write about that, but it was a why of having another relationship with Shetland, I think. And I suppose I was feeling I'm never going to come home now. You can? I thought I'm only going to be south for a pretty while and then I'll be home. But somehow I think I realised then I would never be, it would never be the same. And so I was going to be a south wife. Good heavens, what a thought. And I had to find a new way accommodating to that idea.
Mm-hmm. And you find that in writing?
I think so. And good bless the New Shetlander, because they published some of my early Brock, I would say, when I look back on it. Now I'm embarrassed, but you can. Folk like John and Lolly were very, very encouraging. And that's so important to somebody starting out, that you get that encouragement. And a pretty bit of criticism to keep you on the right rails as well.
Another bit of music, maybe?
Okay, well, this is maybe a kind of a slightly sadder one in a way, which maybe fits the tone. At Simon and Garfunkel, I quite like it, their music at that time. It's very gentle kind of music and a lot of harmony. I love things where you can hear the different pieces of harmony, and there's a guitar and there's an orchestra and there's all kinds of layers of sound, and it's just kind of a river of music, and it's a very short piece. It's called Song for the Asking.
Here is my song for the asking. Ask me and I will play so sweetly, I'll make you smile. This is my tune for the taking. Take it, don't turn away. I've been waiting. Thinking it over, I'd be sad. Thinking it over, I'd be more than glad to change my ways. For the asking, ask me and I will play all the love that I hold inside.
Well, that's Simon and Garfunkel, taken us back a few years. We sung for the asking. Mm-hmm. What work is it that does now? Because there's no teaching now.
No. Well, I did 10 years teaching, and at that stage my mother was really poorly, and I just couldn't cope with the teaching and coming up whenever she was needing and whatever. So I gave that up, and I got into a research degree, a Master Education, and I worked at the university for 20 years in research, in education, and then I got a job part-time out at what was then the exam board. And I loved it there. I thought we were awful fine and friendly, and I enjoyed that. And then eventually it became a full-time job, and of course now it's the Scottish Qualifications Authority, which I have to say with bated breath in case somebody punches me.
The dreaded SQA.
Oh, the dreaded SQA. Bless it, bless it. But it's I could write a book about it, Mary, but I'll know.
Just to know, miss the teaching?
I do, to be honest, because I really enjoyed it, but I think it's something that's difficult to go back to. I had to go on a refresher course. I don't think I could do it now, to be honest.
And of course, something we're not talking about is there's actually Mrs. DeLuca.
I am indeed, yes.
Is that anything to do with ice cream for DeLuca?
Sadly, no. They're no Lucas of all. The man's name is Scapaticcio, and his first name is Luca.
Ah!
Yeah, so we turned it round for the Scottish tongue.
The best ice cream in Edinburgh.
It's awful, awful good, yeah. No, this is a greengrocering. Not so exotic as ice cream. But I met Damien when I'd been on Mayen for 20 years, and I used to go into his shop. He had a delicatessen in a greengrocer's shop, and he was awful jolly. And he should have swept me off my feet. We couldn't, chalk and cheese were just so different. He's no interested in Shetland, and he's no interested in poetry. He thinks it's the silliest thing in the world. He's no interested in Shetland poetry. But he's good and natured, and we get on. We've been married for 26 years, so...
Well, that does say something.
Well, that's right, that's right. He puts up for me.
And, of course, we're not talking about thy biggest production of all, Daniel.
My boy. 18, no. Well, that was... The happiest day of my life was the day he was born. It was just lovely because I didn't think I was going to have any bairns. And then at 37, he came into my life and it's never been the same since. He's been such an easy boy to bring up and a delight to have. And of course, he's a teenager now and he'll be going away for him. And you had to let them ging and hopefully he'll come home lots. But we're good pals.
Well, he actually put on Adai Music for this programme. He put on a CD and marked it Oldies for the Oldie.
Yes, he has a sense of humour, and he's also made a website for me. I'm pleased with that.
And now he's going to fly the nest.
Yeah, well, you kind of keep them. We enjoyed Gianawa when we were that age, and you have to encourage them and to have confidence to make their way in the world. And you had a good be with him.
Cue for the next bit of music. And this is a classical piece, Beneath the Palm.
Yes, this is, well, I don't know if you call it classical, but it's by Julian Bream and John Williams. I love their classical guitar, but in fact, I like guitar music and the kind of rhythm of it. They play a lot of Spanish music, and this is a piece by a man, Albanese, for the 19th century. It's quite old, Beneath the Palm. It's Spanish songs, and I just love it. And when I was expecting Daniel, I was trying to learn play classical guitar, and of course as the months were on, it got more and more difficult. And then of course when you have a period of time around you don't have time to sit and play, so this kind of reminds me of that time, I suppose. So that's what it is.
Beneath the Palm. Mm-hmm. Well, did you never go on to learn at all the classic guitar then?
No, I kind of gave it up.
Just to play anything?
No, I don't really. I used to play pretty bit on the piano really badly, but I sang in the Kirk Choir and I just love that. I love harmony and singing together and I enjoy that.
There is thy poetry, and that's what we come back to. We just launched thy third collection. Mm-hmm. And a long time for that collection was finished, so I bet to have the markings of another book nearly under the belt.
Well, I suppose I likely do if I actually just kind of had a look to see. Mind you, I must have been working an awful lot with me this last 20 years with the problems we had, and that's been long hours and difficulties. So it's not been an awful productive time. I mean, far asleep and even at the fire some nights. But I have a bra lot if I just wail among it. Mm-hmm. As you get older, you get more fussy about what you want to publish, though.
Well, I suppose that's right, because mm-hmm. you'll become able to be more critical of your own work in some ways.
That's one of the problems for me, though, is when I'm so there's nobody really to look at the Shetland stuff and say whether it's good, bad, or indifferent. And you had to be critical of your own work, and it's no easy when you're writing it yourself, you can.
And the dialect is still a very big strand in what they write.
Probably with half of what I write, about that. And a poem kind of decides itself whether it's going to be in dialect or in English, I would say. Definitely, I can't imagine ever no writing in dialect.
Well, in fact, just putting the dialect on the map in several different ways. Do you find a new poetry literary magazine that there's gotten Shetland on?
Yes, well, I was in Helsinki at a poetry festival, was it last summer, I think it was, and invited to do Shetland poetry. I'll tell you, there's something else declaiming this poetry for the... It's like Princes Street Gardens in Helsinki, that kind of feel to it. And folks sitting there in cafes listening to this stuff, it was really weird. Anyway, I made lots of good friends there. Lovely, lovely place, and what fine folk. And this Finnish wife, she told me about this. She found out about this thing called Ice Floe. So I get on the web and I find Ice Floe, and it's for countries north of 60 degrees. So I joined and subscribed, and I got a copy. It's every winter solstice and summer solstice, beautifully produced in Alaska. And they have an editor in Norway and an editor in Iceland and all over the place. And they were accepting poems for different parts of the northern hemisphere, but you had to be north of 60. So I wrote to them and said, Shetland lies almost entirely within 60 degrees and has a very distinctive dialect. Would they be interested in poems for there? And they said yes, they would. So I know it says in the back of the journal that Shetland is part of that. And in fact, I had a poem published in it, and it's lovely to see the Shetland dialect lying alongside you kind of Russian and Swedish and Icelandic and some of the lesser Kent sort of dialects, I suppose, or lesser known languages like Sami and different versions of Russian and whatever. So it's sitting there alongside them, and it's great.
And some of that stuff has been translated into Italian.
Yes, that's right.
Did they do that yourself?
No, it was an Italian fellow that did that. In fact, I came to Milan and I took part there in a pretty reading, and I thought to myself, it's 1,000 years or more since probably the kind of Nordic sounds were heard there.
Yes.
That was wonderful too. So I did that. And then I recently had an experience. I was asked if I'd come and join in a translation event for, it was the Scottish Poetry Library, mostly, that was arranging it. And there was two was for Scotland, and there was an Icelandic poet and a Norwegian poet and a Swedish-speaking Finnish poet. And there were three translators. One could do Icelandic, and one was a Dane that could do Danish and English and whatever. And then there's a Welsh poet as well. It was really absolutely amazing. I was terrified because they were they had languages, whereas I had a dialect, and they were making their living out of teaching literature and writing. I was only working in a kind of ordinary day job. And so I really was quite anxious about the whole thing, but I didn't need to be. They were really lovely and friendly. And we were locked away for 2.5 days together. And we just translated each other's work. And we'd work in twos and threes, And I thought, well, maybe I'll have difficulty with the dialect because it doesn't have abstract nouns and things that you kind of need. But if I pick at the poems that were kind of very direct, then it was really quite easy. The Nordic languages are really easy to deal with. And they find mine no that bad to do, I think. But the Welsh, my mighty me, it's just a different world. It's like outside in. It was like I can only describe it as trying to drive on the wrong side of the road with a car with a steering wheel on the right. You can in a map that doesn't feel very familiar. It's long-winded, but beautiful, beautiful to listen to. And you can, we're working at it together. You could get it into the dialect fine. I was amazed just how accommodating the Shetland dialect was.
And now back to thee. What's thy ambitions? Places to go, things to do?
Well, I don't really. I've never really had a lot of ambitions, just to be happy and to make other folk happy. I would like to keep on writing. I would maybe like to write more stories. I mean, writing one or two bairn stories recently, and I quite enjoyed doing that. I never thought I would do that. So maybe I'll do a bit more of that. I would like a bit more time to write, but to be honest, I think if you give me a day and a piece of blank paper, I might be less inclined. It's a funny thing. Sometimes when you have less time, time is there for more precious, and you make more of it. So I don't know if I'll be able to write more when I can retire, but I would like to think I would. I would like to travel a pretty bit more. I'm not hugely bothered about that, because to me, every place is interesting. And every pretty place is interesting. I mean, if you just look around this garden, every pretty nook and cranny is interesting. You don't have to travel far to find things that are worth writing about.
And then the question I ask folk in about the night, what is your personal philosophy? Look, by that I mean, everybody can enjoy the good times, but what personal inner strength do you have that helps you get through the bad times? What is your kind of code that you live by?
Well, forgive and forget is definitely an important one. And I think I may try to be positive, and the cup is at least half full. Somebody's usually putting the corner in and he's three quarters full. He's never half empty. And just try and bring a smile to their folk, and don't dwell on the sad parts of life if you can, but they look ahead and be as happy as you can be.
And now we come to the end of the programme. We're still in the garden. The rain is just coming on again, but the sun is still shining. So, thy last bit of music is Barcelona.
Barcelona by Queen. Did you see Brian May on the top of the Buckingham Palace for the Queen's Jubilee? My dear, why would I thought? That was wonderful. I very like Queen's music, and this particular one I think was lovely. It's a kind of crossover between opera, kirk music, rock music, anthems, the whole jing-bang lot. Freddie Mercury was asked by this Spanish operatic singer, Montserrat Cabal, Cabalé, is that her name? I can't even say it right. To write about her city, Barcelona or Barcelona, and he wrote this rock anthem, and I just absolutely love it.
This perfect dream.
Sueño me volvió.
This dream was me and you.
Hoy ves estás aquí.
I want all the world to see.
Instinto me guiaba.
Miracle sensation, my guide and inspiration. Calling.
the Lord.